Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, Odin Health is an Irish male fertility supplement brand founded by Conor Moolla. His reason for starting it is about as personal as it gets. Conor was told he'd have next to no chance of having children of his own. Rather than accept that, he built something. Odin is now one of very few Irish brands speaking directly to the male side of trying to conceive, and Conor joins me in studio now. Conor, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We made it happen. You and I met at the Future Fertility Show, and I just thought your story was so powerful because, as I said before the ad break, we don't really hear as often from the men in this discussion.
Yeah, and I guess that's probably a bit why I do it myself. And yeah, I'm not usually... I was always told I had a face for radio, so it's weird to be on radio and then talk about male fertility. It's not how I thought my life would go, but yeah, here I am.
Here we are. So before we get into your personal story, when would you have started to consider your fertility? As a teenager, would you be thinking about the possibility of getting someone pregnant or the quality of your sperm or anything like that?
Yeah, to be honest, probably never really thought about it, other than obviously I went to school in Ireland, and the only thing you thought about basically is you should be afraid of getting someone pregnant. And never there's you should think about if you can get someone pregnant. So you, at least for me, and I know a lot of the guys that have talked about it, is you always assumed that what you need to think about is make sure you don't get someone pregnant, and not do I need to worry about even getting to that phase.
Yeah, I think that's something, you know, only in my anecdotal evidence as women, as young girls, we're taught that it can happen at the drop of a hat. And then, you know, you get into a situation later in life where you are looking to get pregnant and you realize it can be a bit more complex than that, and that's where you found yourself. So yourself and your now wife Kerry, when did you begin to talk about having children?
Yeah, it was, I remember quite specifically, we'd gone away on the Christmas time in January 2024. We decided that we were adult enough now to consider having a family, and that's when we started trying. And like that, you go into a lot of excitement, and the first few months are exciting, and then it turned into okay, strange, still nothing happening. And then it was actually a year before we then took kind of formal action to get ourselves tested. So honestly, I hadn't thought about my side of things at all. Kerry, during that first year, was making loads of changes. She was taking supplements, she was drinking less, exercising more, always researching what she could do differently. And I kind of just turned up, so to speak. So when I got my results back, and it was on Valentine's Day 2025, I got my results back. I wasn't really expecting anything other than a formal, yeah, you're good to go. So when he told me, yeah, he gave me these results in lots of medical terms. And I said, look, what does that mean? He said, look, you probably won't be able to have kids. And I remember as soon as he said it, it clicked in my brain. I couldn't look him in the eyes anymore. I actually had to look down. And to this day, I still remember he was wearing white Crocs. So I have like post-traumatic Croc syndrome. Like I just can't see Crocs anywhere without thinking of it. And all of a sudden I had this huge wave of shame and guilt. And I was like, didn't really know how to work with it. And kind of as I was leaving, I was like, look, what can I do? And he said, oh, maybe look into a supplement. That was the only advice I got. And yeah, I remember walking home, and I'll be honest, I cried. I still remember being on the phone to my wife, and just so many things going through your head. What's it mean to be a man if you can't reproduce? How could I be a good husband that I was letting my wife down? Yeah, so it was quite a lot at the start.
And it came down to sperm quality. That's what was said in that meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, so without getting into the nitty-gritty details of it, there's kind of a couple of sperm parameters that they look at. So one is motility, so how well it swims. The other is the concentration, so how much of it is there. And the other one is morphology, so it's shape, so the shape of the head and the shape of the tail. And I had issues with both the motility and the morphology. And yeah, that was my issue, so to speak.
And it is personal, isn't it? As you said, because it's got so many ramifications in your personal life. But I just think it's really commendable of you to say it made you question, well, who am I as a man? Because I know women go through this a lot, and there's a lot around the language used in fertility when people are told they have an inhospitable womb space and other such things. And you take it that your body is letting you down and there's that you are personally responsible for this. We don't often hear this.
Yeah, no, and particularly for men as well, I think we have a more sensitive ego, so to speak. And I think a lot of, look, for me personally, I linked it to my masculinity. And then as I was going into the research then, yeah, it was all about masculinity, and people linking fertility to virility. So yeah, at the time, and the first few months were pretty rough. I felt super alone that I couldn't talk to anyone about it, because like that I was less of a man, less of a husband. So that was, it was tough. And then I decided, and at the time my thinking was, well, it was misplaced, I think, male pride, where I was like, I'm going to try fix myself. Not that there was anything broken, and I wouldn't use that now, but at the time I was thinking, I'm going to fix myself. What can I do? And I'd gone then into a lot of research papers, and I think in the fertility world in general, there's not enough research and focus on it. And when it's more on the female side of things, so my pool of research was relatively small. And I kind of found these nutrients that had been studied that had then proven to improve sperm parameters. Then I went to look for a product on the market that had these kind of 10 ingredients at the doses that they were studied at. And I couldn't find that anywhere, which frustrated me. And I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So I was like, well, if I'm going to try to fix myself, I'm going to do it properly. So then I kind of sourced it all individually. And I remember at one point, I actually had a picture of it. There's like 15 tablets on the table that I was taking every day. I felt like such an old man, but I did it. And then after 5 months, I got retested and my numbers had all improved past what would be considered from infertile into fertile. And then a month later, we got pregnant with what is now our daughter, Hope, who's named because at one point we felt like there was no hope. So it was very apt for us.
I could actually start crying, Connor. I know when we met, you told me your wife was pregnant, but it was lovely to see on social media that your daughter had arrived, and I didn't know until the ad break here now that her name is Hope.
Yeah.
And I know this conversation will give a lot of people hope. And this is one of the frustrating things often about many situations within the health environment, that, you know, what happens in research doesn't quite make it down to the consumer. I mean, if you hadn't sought all of that out, which must have been difficult to do, and you hadn't gathered together all of those 15 pills, you might not be where you are today. So people need to be able to get access to the information.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the mission behind what I do. What I do is, I could have just accepted that diagnosis. You probably won't be able to have kids, and we would have probably gone in the IVF route and probably invested quite a lot of money and emotion and time into that. And not to say that that's a bad thing. I think IVF is great and such a good resource that we have. But had I not proactively kind of advocated to myself, the journey might have looked a lot different for us. And that's kind of why I talk about sperm on social media. It's really not where I thought my life would go. But I think it's important that, again, I think men were relatively lucky. Again, we have this window where sperm regenerate every 74 days, so let's say 3 months, that if we make small, consistent changes within that window, it can improve our sperm quality. So you don't even need to have a bad diagnosis. If you know you're going to have, or you're planning to have a family, just take 3 months to make the small changes, whether it's exercising more, eating better, drinking less alcohol. And I say it to people, and people come up to me at the Future Fertility Show, I'm like, the worst case scenario is you're just healthier for 3 months. That's the worst thing that can happen. And you don't even need to spend any money. You could probably save money.
And you had made these changes along with the 15 pills.
Yes.
You had made some lifestyle changes.
Yeah, so I would have liked to think at the time I was relatively healthy already, which probably why I came as more of a shock. So I ate well, exercised quite a lot. The changes I made were around two things. One was alcohol, which was the most difficult for me personally. And the second one was around heat. So heat has a huge impact on sperm quality. So having your phone in your front pocket. I know now saunas are the absolute biggest thing in Dublin, but also to be conscious of that as well, like cycling as well, stuff like that. So those were the two areas where I kind of focused the most. So it was a bit random. I travel quite a lot for work. So when I would come home, I was conscious that I'd be sitting for a long time. And I would always then sit on an ice pack while we're watching Netflix or whatever. And at the start, my wife was like, this is totally bizarre, Connor, what are you doing? But then it just became part of the habit for those, what turned out to be 5 months, 6 months before we got pregnant.
Wow. You know, it's so interesting that you have that 3 months, because otherwise I think that would get quite cold.
Yes. Yeah.
And difficult. But it's nice to have that 12 weeks, and obviously beyond, you went into 5 months, six months. But to have that in your mind, to make these changes over 12 weeks for the new cycle of sperm quality, I think that would be really helpful to any men in a similar position. Can I ask you as well about sharing it? You obviously, at the start, it was a big shock to the system, and you and your wife had to navigate it, I'm sure, together, and you had to get your head around it. But when did you begin to tell people, either your close family or your close friends?
Yeah, that was definitely the most difficult. So close family would have been at the start, like parents, really, talking about it, because they knew we'd been trying, and I don't know, I felt like I was better to get ahead of it, so to speak. And then I only felt I could open up to friends when I actually got that first test result where everything was then normal again, because then I didn't feel as embarrassed looking back on it now. That's why I felt I could open up. And it was crazy. So I had three really close friends, and I spoke to all three of them about it. And two of them had already known people who were going through IVF because there was a male factor issue involved. And the third guy, he said it was one of his biggest fears that he might have an issue. And then I asked him, well, have you gotten tested? He's like, no, geez, I would never get tested. Which, again, I think is part of our ego.
Yeah, and again, you're able to say, well, look, you can turn things around potentially within 12 weeks. And I think that's really positive information.
Yeah.
And I really hope that's something people get from this conversation. Let's open up a little bit more, because I'd imagine your wife was discussing with her friends in the lead up while she was making those changes, and she was asking questions and saying, well, because often this happens, everyone's doing it at the same time, aren't they? Everyone's getting engaged, having their hens and stags, getting married, if that's the way your life goes. And then potentially, you know, your two best friends get pregnant and someone else, and you go, geez, well, we give it a go.
Yeah.
It's that kind of way that life tends to happen. So there are other people in your circle going through the very same thing, and yet we keep it quiet. And I understand it's a very personal journey, particularly if there's issues. Yeah. And every time you meet people, you don't like to be told, you know, questioned any news, what's happening, to discuss inner details as you are in the radio now about your sperm quality. But I think it's important because it can be so helpful. And as you said, when you did it, it turned out there were, you know, three people going through similar to you, and you were able to give them valuable information.
Yeah. And kind of what I tell people is, I mean, it's probably not at the level yet where it's going to be pub conversation about your sperm quality. But I know a lot of my circle, they're now mad for like high rocks and marathon training and stuff. And they talk about what they're doing to prepare for it, how they're eating, how they're training. And I think that's the same approach we need to take to treat having or preparing to have a family in the same kind of way. It's, you wouldn't just run a marathon tomorrow. So maybe we should, when we do something as important to start a family, also look into how do we prepare better for it. And for me, and what I always try to tell people, it's just small, consistent changes. You don't need to upend your life, but maybe instead of the 3 pints that you would have on a Friday, you have 3 non-alcoholic, or maybe just 2 pints. It's about small changes that I think can have a big influence. It doesn't need to be a full turn everything upside down.
Yeah, like I'm sure Hope has now that she has arrived, and we will get to that. But let's talk about your other baby, Odin, the supplement brand. I was Googling you to prepare for the interview, and you had a really good job. You have upended your life to bring about, I assume, turning 15 pills into a smaller number.
Yeah, I actually do it. I still work full time. So I have 2 full-time jobs now with the baby. Actually, like, feels like 7 full-time jobs. But yeah, when we had the success, I kind of thought, geez, it's crazy that like there wasn't anything available. And honestly, I did it a bit on a whim to set it up. I just had this feeling I wanted to do something. So then, I decided I'd want to manufacture the supplement. So it's manufactured here in Ireland. We've kind of been live since the Future Fertility Show there in March. And yeah, really, for something that I never really had planned in my future, it's now growing quite significantly, which is really nice. And every day you get messages on Instagram, people saying, oh, even little things like, thanks for sharing the videos, because it allows me to talk to my husband about his fertility in a much more open way, to people saying, no, your supplement has been great. So that's Odin. I'm actually terrible at talking about it. I'm not a very good businessman in that sense.
But look, you're just sharing your story and you're starting the conversation. And if people want to find out more, what is the Instagram?
So it's Connor, Conor, and then like an underscore Odin, O-D-Y-N.
Why is it called that?
Well, when I was going through it, the biggest thing that I always felt was like I was less of a man. And all the supplements on the market were either targeted towards women. So they had started a female-focused brand, and then they kind of put on this male fertility supplement as a tag on. That makes, at least at the time, I felt like less of a man. Or they were marketed to be quite medical, which I also think is important to say. A supplement isn't a cure. It's not a magic pill. It works in conjunction best with lifestyle changes. And it's in the name. It's to supplement what you don't already get from your diet. And the last one was, if they weren't medically targeted, there were things like suggesting that it would improve your masculinity. Whereas I think we need to separate fertility from masculinity altogether. So then I just wanted something that didn't feel anything like that. So Odin kind of just came about. Now, that because we have really, I guess, research-backed doses, I could say that ODYN stands for only doses you need, but that's only in hindsight that I can stand for that. And when it came to the design, what I thought as well, I wanted something that a guy could have on their kitchen counter, and if a friend came around last minute to visit, they wouldn't feel like this need, oh geez, I need to hide that away, that it was something that could sit there and not be so embarrassing, or that there was something wrong with you, but rather it's a proactive thing that you're doing.
I love that. Okay. Tell me about Life with Hope then. What age is she?
She is now 5 weeks. 5 weeks and 2 days. As my wife texts me every day. Oh my God, she's another day older. Like, yep, great. We got there. So life is totally different now. We did all these classes and you think you're prepared for it. And then she came and everything totally upended. But I have to say, I love coming home every day and just seeing her. And then the screaming starts and then it's less. But yeah.
Yeah, it's constant. And 5 weeks is really the trenches. I don't even think you come up for air until about 12 weeks and possibly never truly breathe again. But it is a really special time. And, you know, I think it's important to say not every fertility journey ends with this being the particular happy ending. And I love now through conversation, through podcasts, we're being a bit more open now that you can still have a very fulfilling life if you don't become a parent, although that can be very difficult to get your head around. However, that is not yourself and Kerry's story. And I think it's a really brilliant one, a really powerful one. And let's open up, let's talk about it a little bit more. Connor Moolah of Odin Health, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.